Hello everyone and welcome to this episode of the Big Boat Interview. My name is Caroline White, Deputy Editor of Boat International, and this time I spoke to Mathieu Ritz, a Swiss filmmaker now based in Bali, who you may know from his much-lauded documentary Anote's Ark, about the Pacific island nation of Kiribati, which will be among the first on Earth to be swallowed up by the oceans as sea levels continue to rise. His follow-up, Deep Rising, is narrated by Jason Momoa and premiered to much fanfare at the 2023 Sundance Film Festival. It investigates the subject of deep sea mining, with engaging characters locked in a dramatic narrative and some spectacular underwater photography. This week's episode is sponsored by KVH, the service that creates innovative connectivity solutions for customers on sea, land, and air around the globe. KVH is a global leader in mobile connectivity, content, and value-added services with technology designed to enable a mobile world and keep mariners always connected. To find out more, visit kvh.com. So we're going to start off with Mathieu to tell us a little bit, in a nutshell, about Deep Rising, what it's about, and how you became interested in the subject.
Hello, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for the invitation. Yeah, so Deep Rising started in 2018 while I was actually just premiered with Anote's Ark and getting into a world tour with a film. Came to London actually at the Boat International at that time and really, you know, trying to focus on what was the next big Pacific Island story. While I was working in Kiribati with President Tong doing my film, I had some privileged information, let's say, around this upcoming story of deep sea bed mining. But at that time, I didn't knew how big the story will be. And really, I kind of opened this Pandora box that becomes so complex because deep sea bed mining mixed so many big stories. On one hand, you have this last frontier, this pristine ecosystem on the seafloor in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, south of Hawaii. And it's this large, you know, unknown territory. Every time we dive there, we discover new species. It's really like this alien world in our own planet. But at the same time, all those metals lying down there in the form of polymetallic nodules that are claim to be, you know, all the metal we need to power our so-called green revolution. And then all the governance, who owns it, what is the governance of the ICs and the seafloor? And then I realized that actually this obscure organization called the International Seabed Authority, based in Kingston, Jamaica, was the UN, United Nations instrument that has mandate to protect and exploit all the seafloor and the subseafloor. So, you know, starting to peel those stories, like, whoa, this is actually really big. And really, I jump on this now almost 7 years journey doing this documentary, but also, you know, starting sharing a lot of the narrative around it. And it's been very successful in terms of what we've been doing in Impact, more than 1,000 screenings all over the planet. And I've been on the road constantly to share the story to the world.
Amazing. So you've got some interesting ingredients there for a story. You've got people who want to do deep sea mining to get the minerals to create the batteries for electric cars. You've got the people who want to protect the seabed. You've got kind of big corporations, you've got little scientists, you've got a big organization which is kind of deciding who can do what where. So what I thought was quite interesting, one of the most interesting things about the film is that it's not totally black and white. You don't have a clear good guy and a clear bad guy. You have two sides who would probably both claim that they were doing a good thing. Can you tell us what you found interesting about that dynamic, particularly between those two characters, the marine biologist and the metals company CEO, and how you approached their dynamic in the film, that relationship?
Absolutely. I mean, as a filmmaker, you know, we need to create those narrative curve. We need to create those dramas, let's say, really to get the audience into a story. Otherwise, you know, as a documentary filmmaker, what you end up doing is having, you know, what we call talking head, like interviews, people just sitting in a chair explaining you things. it's very interesting, and it gives you a lot of information, but it's not more like into kind of journalist work or reportage work. But building a feature film really needs to get this, you know, emotional connection to the story, the drama, you know, the thrillers, all that, you know, what people just gets into it. So when I started the film, I saw, well, like, okay, we need the CEO, we need this person that actually, you know, is on a journey to push this industry. We need the pushback from a scientist, in this case, it's a geologist, a deep sea geologist. But we also need the voice of the ocean itself. So I had this idea of, you know, making those two kind of confrontational characters, and then really they get into more of a natural history style where we have like this, you know, beautiful underwater footage with very a poetic score. And a voiceover, and obviously I was very fortunate to have Jason Momoa, the Aquaman, you know, with his very deep voice.
Very relaxing.
Really, it's just like getting his almost hypnotic scenes. And really it took me a year, and more than a year actually, of editing with a team from actually Ireland, just to get this story right.
Yeah, and how did you get Jason Momoa involved? Actually, I was going to ask you that.
Well, I mean, it was really out of the blue. I wrote to this agent, and obviously the agent's first reaction was like not interested. But I pushed, and you know, at one point I just sent a letter to Jason, really like, dear Jason, and I just asked the agent, can you just, you know, please share that letter, and I promise I will never get back to you if Jason, you know, is not interested. And in that letter, I really called to his Pacific Islander bloodline and really said to Jason, well, look, you know, that's the future of your future, that deep sea bed mining will affect, you know, your future generation, your bloodline. And as a Pacific Islander, it's a critical story for you and for your children and grandchildren. And that really moved him. Mm-hmm. He watched the film, was very, very moved. And he understood, you know, what was at stake for the future generation, basically.
Okay. And getting into the nitty gritty of the issues at stake in the documentary, can you tell us a little bit more about these deep sea nodules, which come up a lot in the film, what they are, why people are so keen to find them, and what the problems are of getting them up?
Well, the claim from the industry is that there is this enormous untapped resources of nickel, cobalt, manganese, and some rare earth metals sitting there, down in the seafloor, in a mining area that will be equivalent of the side of Europe or Mongolia. So it's actually massive amount of underwater land. If you imagine the entire, you know, surface of Europe being opened up for mine, and the claim is that it's more sustainable and better for the planet to get there to get those metals from the seafloor than tearing down rainforest and keep on, you know, doing landmine activities. With a claim, also very important claim to start with, that, you know, by 2030, the amount of metal we need will be exponentially big. Call it like, you know, kind of the future is metallic, or the metals are the new oil. And this, you know, part of the story is like this green revolution is really based on metals. But that's only one part of the story, because there is countless alternative right now to produce energy without using those metals. The iron phosphate chemistry, for instance, for the batteries is becoming, you know, more and more present, and it's becoming a type of battery that a lot of the biggest car manufacturer is looking after. And iron phosphate doesn't have a gram of nickel or cobalt. So, you know, I think things are moving so fast right now that it's very hard to predict where we're going to be in 5 years or even in 10 years in terms of, you know, what type of technology will be deployed and are we going to produce energy. So I think it's a tricky situation where we based a lot of the decision on what we know as a market today, but disturbing technology are changing the whole picture.
And so people are going down right now to either explore with the potential of mining these metals from the deep sea, or they're actually doing it right now. What are the problems when they go down there? What disturbance are they making? What damage are they doing?
Well, the whole thing is we don't know. And that's the biggest problem. We don't have enough science. Most of the science is done by the contractors themselves. The results are peer-reviewed, but for me, it's a bit of a similar situation with the pharmaceutical, let's say, you know, where you have a Pfizer, whatever, the big pharma, you know, doing all the peer review science to put a medicine on the market, but everything has been paid by the pharma. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't mean that it's bad science. It just means it's science paid by the people who have interest in deep sea mining. So there's not much, if not at all, science that is being funded independently from the contractor. That's, you know, a first issue, I think, a flag we have to raise. And the thing as we don't have enough science, we actually don't really know the repercussion. But what we know is, you know, the deep sea floor is world's biggest carbon thing, and it's the disturbances on the seafloor might have long lasting repercussion on the climate. We know that the oceans sustain all form of life on Earth. So there's a lot of NGOs talking about this concept of precautionary approach, and I think it's an interesting one where it comes to understanding what we should do, and it's fundamentally like let's not rush into extracting the seafloor minerals before we have enough science and we actually really understand the repercussion of doing it.
Okay. And I know that there's you have some beautiful footage of the ecosystem and the animals and creatures that live in the deep sea. And I know that there was mention of jellyfish and microbes as creatures that actually do a lot for us, but we don't know about it. Could you tell us anything about that?
Well, you know, when we look at life on Earth as human, you know, we are very anthropocentric. So we're going to care more about mammals or about animals that have the same feature than us. A whale is much more important to us because I think we can rely to a whale as a mammal. And then you have all the coral reef and all this very, very cute, beautiful, appealing form of life that we don't want to lose. But we tend to forget that, you know, all the microbial and all the microscopic form of life is actually what keeps us alive. Our own body actually is 10. We have 10 times more cells in our body with like actually, you know, microbes and bacteria that don't belong to us. Basically, it's like the DNA is not ours. So even our body mass is you know mostly formed with those foreign form of life. So it's interesting, I think, to really get into an understanding of, you know, what are the fundamental structure of life, and what is this web of life? I think the biggest problem is we don't look at the planet Earth in a holistic view. So we see all those problems separately, and we try to fix problem by it's almost like, you know, Western medicine against, you know, Chinese medicine, holistic medicine. Because be like, okay, your liver is failing, so let's try to find a medicine or a cure for the liver, but you know, it might come from a more global problem. And this is exactly what's happening in how we try to fix things. And deep sea bed mining for me is the same, goes in the same paradigm where, you know, we have a problem, we need to move away from fossil fuel. Let's find this massive amount of pristine minerals somewhere without understanding that actually, you know, that might not be the solution to fix the climate collapses. And that's, you know, a big message in Deep Rising is that we have to shift the paradigm of extraction, because we're still going after finite resources. So we're still digging more and more and more of those finite resources, and it will not solve the problem. So it's just a shift of view. And I'm not claiming here, you know, that we not need to get into the electrification of the economy. And of course, you know, we need to drive EVs, we need to find solution. But you know, when we can have a battery that is mass is based on iron and phosphate, and that iron is 5% of all elements of the Earth's crust, and nickel is 0.005%, maybe we should ask ourselves why we're still getting to those rare, difficult, hard to find minerals. And maybe one of the answer to this is like, is actually, you know, good for ROI, is actually good for you know, the more you get after rare or difficult to find elements, the more control you have, the more monopoly you can get, and the resource, the asset themselves goes, you know, higher in a trade in the market, you know, because it's basically offer and demand dynamics. So I think that we're still kind of stuck in this paradigm, and that has to change, I think, to fix the global trouble we have.
Yeah, absolutely. So on a related note, in charge of all of this stuff, all of the mining, is this body that I'd never heard of before, called, can you give me the name of it?
The International Seabed Authority.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody's heard of this before. So could you tell us a little bit about this organization, where it came from, where it is, and what it does?
So the International Seabed Authority is an instrument from the UN that has a dual mandate to protect and exploit seabed resources on the seafloor and subfloor. It was built upon the ratification of the Law of the Sea. So the Law of the Sea is massive, piece of literature. Like, it's a massive, basically, law that was ratified in 82 by most countries. The US and fewer didn't ratify, but most countries ratified it. And it gives a framework, basically, to build this International Seabed Authority. And it's interesting. I mean, it's based in Kingston, Jamaica. As you're just saying, most people have never heard about it, but they still have a mandate to oversee 50% of the planet's surface. And it's been mostly done behind closed door, and they mostly don't want, you know, coverage. They don't really like, you know, media going there. It's, you know, they kind of like them, you know, to operate outside of, you know, global scrutiny.
Okay. And they're deciding based on evidence from scientists and mining companies what to do, whether to grant rights to mine the deep sea, is that right?
Well, they have a legal and technical commission that is in charge of drafting a mining code. So the mining code will be the legal, you know, framework for countries to actually kickstart an exploitation. Now we have exploration, so just basically to transform the license into exploitation, which means basically starting deep sea bed mining. The legal and technical commission is always changing, but currently there's very few scientists in it. It's mostly lawyers and people who are actually here to draft the regulation. This year is very important because it's an election year. So July 24, end of July 24, there will be a general assembly, and for new candidates, there's currently two candidates, and depending of the result of the election, you can really go one way or the other, because the Secretary General has a lot of power, actually, on pushing one agenda or the other, which means, you know, maybe more going into the precautionary approach, slowing down, making enough science in order to really get everything we need, or kind of rushing the mining code and you're like, let's start now. It's so important to get those nickel as soon as possible for the benefit of humanity, even if we don't have enough science. So, you know, 24 is a critical year for deep sea bed mining and for the future of the ocean.
Absolutely. So very topical. So what have the repercussions of the film been so far? So it came out last year? Yeah. So what's the reception been? What are the repercussions been?
it's been overwhelmingly good. You know, we've been having screening everywhere in the planet, more than 1,000 screening last year.
Wow.
You know, which basically means 3 a day. So so it's been extremely busy for me and the whole team, just like carrying, just answering the demands. It's like, it's a very an unusual place to be as a filmmaker. Usually you spend a lot of time pitching, you know, and sending the film and like, please, can you show this film? And we are in a situation where it's kind of the way around. It's like, we are always kind of managing the mass amount of requests coming all the time. So it's been very, very successful. And it's been successful basically to start this conversation. For me, what is the most important is really to raise this issue to the surface, literally, and for people to understand what's happening, and then give all the tools for people to make the decision. And I think what is a very critical aspect also of deep sea bed mining is by the law of the sea, the seafloor and the subfloor is actually the common heritage of humankind. And the law says that it shall be held in trust for future generation, and no corporation or country shall benefit from it. So there's a question of like, how, if we do deep sea bed mining, how the benefit of it will be shared, you know, to all mankind. Mm-hmm. And it's currently, I don't feel it's the case. And, you know, some countries are rushing to it. And it's a global debate. And again, you know, it represents technically almost 50% of the planet's surface, which I find incredible that so few people actually know about the issue. And we should all be concerned and bring our voice basically to the debate, because it's about the future of our children and grandchildren.
Well, many super yacht owners, because they have such close contact with the oceans, are very passionate about protecting the oceans, and they'll be motivated by your film to help in some way. What can they do?
Well, I mean, we are always looking for funding to amplify. You know, that's the most, you know, at this stage, you know, the most we need is actually cash to amplify. And when I mean cash to amplify, is like every dollar we get, you know, we can push to more awareness. As a super yacht owner, I would look into new technologies. You know, I would like, as I'm building my super yacht, what goes into the build, and most importantly into what powers the yacht. You know, the system that powers the yacht, and looking at the supply chain, how much nickel and cobalt and those metals gets in. Or can I, you know, maybe look at alternative technology like green hydrogen, or making sure I have iron phosphate, and not getting kind of fooled by some of the narrative, you know, of like, okay, just, you know, get to this technology, but then what, like, next question is like, okay, but what is this technology made of in terms of the supply chain? And questioning the supply chain is critical. Of course, for, you know, the super yacht owner, the question is fundamentally also like where the investment stands, you know, basically, you know, just looking at the portfolio. And it's like, does the portfolio, you know, have companies that invest in deep sea bed mining? Because that's also maybe something they want to look at, you know, and what a green portfolio really looks like. But it's more like deep sea bed mining would be technology that rely on those rare and critical metals. Because, you know, it's not just only, it could be also like, you know, mining corporations that are, you know, getting nickels out of the rainforest in Indonesia and tearing down massive amount of pristine forest to get this nickel out. So it's not just a deep sea bed mining story. It's a global supply chain crisis story, and how to solve it.
Thank you. And where can people see the film?
So the film is going to be globally out very soon. We've been pushing the global release in order to keep having those screenings everywhere, and you know, but soon, latest in September, sometime in the summer for sure. But you know, we have a central deeprising.com platform, and everything will be posted there.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Mattia. That was absolutely fascinating.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this Big Boat interview, which was mixed and produced by Naomi Wilson and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next time.